energy sector is responsible for more than 75% of the EU greenhouse gas emissions. And the EU has a target to reach 32% of renewable energy generation by 2030. I'm going to speak today with Kyriakos Giologlou, who is the Director for European Government Affairs of Seawind Ocean Technologies. And I'm going to find out what is the place for wind in the decarbonization strategy and what sets floating wind turbines apart. Welcome, Kyriakos. How are you today?
I'm well. It's summer is getting closer and closer, so I can't wait for that. So I'm happy.
Excellent. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today. And my very first question to you is, since you're working in the wind technology area, tell me, what's the potential of the wind technology and why is it so important in our decarbonization strategy?
I work for wind, but I have also another sidekick, as they say. I'm also an academic. So what I will do is I will give you what academia tells us and not what lobbyists, which is also something that I do. So I'd rather give you the independent numbers than my numbers. I have a study from Harvard, which is a big modeling study, where it is calculated that you can have approximately 5% of all energy needed for the planet by wind generation. Mm-hmm. Wind generation that is using something like 20% of its capacity. Wind generation that is not in urban areas, it's not in forest areas, so it's in areas that will not be affecting our habitats and our lives. So you're looking at abundant energy potential. And on top of that, this study does not concern itself with wind energy generation at sea, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the future.
You're working on the floating wind turbines. Can you tell more about which type of turbines these are and what sets them apart?
Let's start from the start. Wind, like all renewable energies, they are what we call technologies that are energy that is produced from the ground up, no? Apart from geothermal. In mm-hmm. the past, we had fossil fuels that were produced beneath the ground, you know, oil, gas, lignite, etc. The future is this kind of above the ground fuels. Now, when we talk about this kind of fuels, we are looking at fuels that are, they are much more flexible, so you can produce them when you want. And then, of course, you can store them. Wind energy generation at sea, both fixed base, so with a foundation, and floating without a foundation, is as far as I'm concerned, as I said, the future. However, 80% of all wind at sea is beyond 60 meters. Mm-hmm. Anything that's beyond 60 meters does not justify a foundation. So you cannot, mechanically, you cannot have a foundation for any sea depth that is beyond 60 meters. It is also not making sense economically. So anything that is beyond 60 meters, you need to do it in a floating way. This is what we do. But there are also different ways of doing that. For sea wind, you are looking at a different technology. People that have... that are familiar with wind power generation know that this is a three blader, you know, and it turns and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Our technology is a bit different. You are looking at a two blader with a little, let's call it a little screw, the teetering hinge between those two blades. And so someone would say, why do you want two? Three is working very well. Three is working well, but two rotates faster. In the deeper seas, you have faster, stronger winds. With the three blades, I don't want to get into the details of engineering, but with the three blades, at some point you need to curtail it. You need to stop it from turning, because otherwise it's going to break. And also the three blader cannot get in and out of the wind. There is the so-called effect, the gyroscopic forces effect, and so on. So you cannot do that. What you can do is you can turn the blades a little bit to withstand the wind, but not too much. With the two blader, which is the technology that you use for helicopters, for example, and this is how it all started, you can rotate faster. And then also this little teetering hinge, it gives you further freedom to go faster. So our technology is built on this. Okay. And on top of that, we have other customizations in the wind turbine. We have a floating foundation. So it is lighter, essentially. It's not a steel foundation. There are a number of things that I can explain further in our discussion today. So you are looking at an integrated product, the floating wind turbine by Seewind. It's a bit different than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since your wind turbines are floating and they are, mm-hmm. I guess, further away in the sea, they should be bigger and they should generate more power, right?
Not necessarily. I always explain this to my nephew. My daughters are a bit young. They are getting there. The older one is 6. The younger one is 3. So I try to explain, but then at some point we start just laugh about what dad is saying. So, but with my nephew who is 13 now, I always discuss with him in terms of what I call a kind of an Italian car model style, meaning our focus is not on building bigger and with more material. We put our efforts in customizing the floating wind turbine. So essentially, bigger is not necessarily better. You don't mm-hmm. because you don't need more materials. You need to make it to make better with what you have in mm-hmm. order to produce more energy with less material. This is one of the reasons that I'm so excited about the Seewind project, also with regard to conservation. So you are looking at something like 25% less steel in the wind turbine compared to our competition. It's a lighter turbine as well. It's a turbine that has less CO2 emissions overall, the entire system. The fact that you have a concrete base and not a steel base, concrete has less CO2 emissions than steel. So mm-hmm. you're looking at 60% less CO2 emissions on the concrete versus steel. On top of that, you know, this thing is part of it is in the water. Mm-hmm. So it's semi-submerged. So you can use this to cool parts of the engine off as well. So essentially you are saving some of that energy that you would be using to cool the motor by that. And so there are a number of customizations that allow you to produce easier mm-hmm. with less energy to develop it, to build it. And then something that is also what engineers say, I'm not an engineer, but I teach engineers, so we talk about that a lot. The faster, the speed of the wind is not equal to the amount of energy produced. So mm-hmm. one time wind, one time energy, 2 times the strength of wind, 8 times the energy produced. So yep. the deeper you go into the sea, the more that you will be producing, the greater material you will be having, the greater output you will be having. So it is something that people will be looking at more and more in the future. So the material part is very important. You don't need to build bigger. And then of course, don't forget that in the deeper seas, not necessarily even the deep seas, but in deeper seas, you have stronger winds and bigger waves. So you need to build this kind of machines that can work with this ecosystem. If you do very big, you might have also a very strong action and reaction, you know. That's why we are not necessarily building always bigger ships. We are building ships that are better adapted to the environment. So this is what we are trying to do. This is our interest, to work with the sea, not against the sea. It will not work like that. Same with the ecosystem. We can talk mm-hmm. about the environment in a moment.
Yeah, just before we go into the ecosystems, how far out in the sea your wind turbines are supposed to be, and how do you transport the power generated from the sea towards the ground?
That's a good question. Let's say anything that is deeper than 60 meters is our territory.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the Mediterranean, a sea that I know very well. I am Greek. I know that part of the world very well, and it's a beautiful sea that is both a commercial sea but also a touristic sea. So mm-hmm. You want to keep it clean. You want to keep it still good for vessels, good for fishing as well, but also you want to reduce any fossil fuels in that area. So there are all these different needs, but it's a deep sea as well. So you can work easily in the Mediterranean Sea, and the distances are not very long. So you can, and we are working with cable makers for very strong, very advanced technologies for transporting the electricity from offshore to onshore. At the same time, we are doing two more things. We are working with companies that are developing batteries, so-called floating batteries,
mm-hmm.
for that part. And the third part, which is the most exciting part for me, is that we are currently working with fuel cell technologists for green hydrogen production, which can be okay. both offshore
mm-hmm.
on the wind turbine itself. So immediately you are storing all your electricity through electrolysis. You are turning that into green hydrogen, and then you mm-hmm. can transport it at will. You can turn it into ammonia for your ships or other. So there are these three different elements. Of course, there are costs. These are top heavy investments, as you can expect. But in terms of our ambition, our in the EU, global ambition for sustainability, for innovation, for progress, there will be immense returns. Cleaner, greener, much more socially friendly as well, innovation, because you are looking at energy generation at the part of the world that is not populated by humans.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, because the technology is so low impact on the environment, there is no impact on migratory birds, for example, because it's not close to the shore. Migratory birds will usually fly closer to islands. Mm-hmm. We are a bit more out. And our mooring system is the anchors. They is based on concrete. This will, in a couple of years after its presence there, it will be transformed into a reef for fish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Our floating system is concrete based. This has multiple positive effects. Firstly, it has double the lifetime compared to a steel floating system. So you're looking at a 50 years lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Less CO2 emissions on account of this CO2 versus steel versus concrete. And the third part, as you can expect, wind blows, rotor turns the turbine, the engine transforms that into electricity. There is some noise, clearly, it's a motor. The tower, so the vertical part of the wind turbine, is metal, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
This metal part will sort of increase, amplify, if you prefer, the noise of the motor. If you have a steel foundation, this will amplify further the noise into the water, which can have issues with fish, particularly whales, dolphins, because this noise propagation, as the sound engineers call it, will can create issues with the the livelihood of the marine habitat, of the fish. It can affect their orientation, etc. The concrete foundation has a dampening effect. So basically it's blocking the noise from the engine into the water. So it's positive in different ways. These are all customizations in our technology that are good for the pocket, for consumers, and it's good for the environment. So that is also an element that is important here. And not only for us, I mean, we are looking at sustainability in general. So we need to look at materials, and we are looking at materials in this sense.
So you are saying that your wind turbines are actually better for the aquaculture. They're also better for the birds. And they're also better in terms of CO2 impact because they're using less materials and the materials that have less impact in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. Do you have an estimation of the number of how much less CO2 emissions are produced during the manufacturing of such wind turbines than the standard ones?
Yeah, well, let's just say that our estimation is that we have a 25% less steam for the wind, the turbine, for the head, and for the rest of the machine, which is approximately, I would say, around 30% less CO2 in general terms. And there is also something like a 60% less CO2 from on the floating fine foundation based on concrete compared to the steel one. So you are looking at maybe 25% less CO2 emissions in general compared to our competition. This is our analysis. This is and then of course we are a startup. Okay, and I found your previous podcast on startups really excellent, and I really enjoyed it. I identified with many parts of it, but we will not be outperformed for sure. And so we are working on that. Saw that podcast, and if there are other people from startups, I agree completely. You are looking at people that are adventurous. I'm still adventurous at 45 years old with two young daughters. So, but I believe in that. And so we are a startup, right? So we have already had our technology reviewed and verified from DNVGL, which is the top verification body for technology in Europe. We have, so our claims on CO2 emissions have been reviewed. Now we want to have our technology tested at sea. We have had our technology verified, the tube radial with the tethering hinge on land. Now the next level is the sea. But in terms of our CO2 emissions, this has been all reviewed. And we are now expecting, as I said, the testing at sea. I think what is very important here, again, sort of responding a little bit on your point about materials, and this, we talk about an Italian design, as I said, optimization. These are all patented by us, so everything belongs to Seawind, from the tube blader to the concrete foundation, the design of it, to the optimization, to some extent to the green hydrogen development offshore. These are all basically, this system has been built, we say, with one hand. Everything works together. We follow an Airbus model, assembly model. So another thing that I say to my nephew and to my daughters, they get that it's like a very intelligent Lego. So basically we are sourcing what we need. Due to economics, it's better to source that regionally, certainly from Europe. If it is, it will be in Europe. But if we can, we go locally, local expertise, local products, because all those floating wind turbines will be built at the port relatively close to the location where it will be stationed. And then you will have a little or rather big ship that will be towing the floating wind turbine to place it at that location. And of course, the difference between, let's say, an oil rig or a gas installation is or a fixed base wind turbine is that it will not necessarily stay there forever. It can move, and it will be moved one way or another at a certain point. So you are looking at a very intelligent design, a design that is flexible, and it's a design that will favor also local communities. Maybe that's also something I believe interesting also for your interests, Elena, as a person that supports the transition and a kind of a more socially minded development. We work in our business plan. We have a role for local communities. Again, this local sourcing of material and of resources. And in our business plan, we have a role for local fishermen. So there is a revenue stream for them. We want to work with local communities. This is also, I think, another difference from us compared to others. So for this kind of machines, you need some visual inspection, not every day, of course, but every few weeks. So we can and we will work with local fishermen to give them the possibility to be part of that project and to have not a modest, but a fixed revenue stream for them so that they will see our machines as part of their ecosystem. We want to work with the local communities.
I mean, that's excellent. You are looking into using less materials, having less CO2 emissions. You're also looking into using storage technologies that help to solve the issue of renewable energy, being floating and dependent on the wind, actually, or same for the solar. And the storage is important if you want to ensure that we have enough supply in the needed time. But you're also looking into the local community impact, involving them into working with your wind turbines and involving them into managing the local fisheries and receiving the income stream. So I find all the combination of all these factors very fascinating and very admirable. And I'm very curious to know, what are your plans as a startup? Where do you want to expand and what do you want to do?
Well, Elena, with regards to our next steps, we are a startup, no? So a startup is a startup by definition is something that is happening as we speak. So the future is right now, and then we will not be outperformed. So we are doing our best to do as many things as we can at the same time, which sometimes results in all sorts of weird things, but yeah, this is life. What I will say is that our immediate priority is to fund our demonstrator at sea. So our 6.2 megawatts floating wind turbine. We have applied for EU funding, Horizon 2020. We should know very soon where we are with that. This is a very good application. Let's see. We are also applying for a test site in Portugal, which is one of the countries in the EU, the member states that is most well advanced, I would say, for floating wind. So Portugal, we will be having access to the test site in the next couple of months. We have support in the form of a letter from the Secretary of State for Energy in Portugal. So we've met at political level and they like us, and this is important for us and for, as I believe also for blue economy purposes in general. At present, we have what we call country managers in France. In Italy, we have a very good team. Greece, my country, is developing very well as well. It's a latecomer in a number of different renewable sources, Greece, but going fast the last year or so. We are reaching out to talk to the Biden administration in the United States. There's a completely different attitude since the result of the recent elections.
That's great.
And we are, it's really a big change. And also it's good because we are talking to them with regard to our regional supply chain, which is very important. Countries, because then you can really talk about jobs and good jobs, US, and this is the last thing is Southeast Asia. We are in discussion with a number of countries, including Japan right now for the possibility of demonstrating and scaling up our technology over there. Our plan is to go commercial by 2025. I think mm-hmm. it's feasible. It's quite close, but I think we can do that. It is quite possible. And then on the green hydrogen part, we are members of the European Green Hydrogen Alliance, which is industry-led. And we are the only floating wind company that is part of those roundtables that exist for developing project, the investment pipeline, as they call it. So we mm-hmm. are active in that. Our ambition is to be able to produce cost-effective green hydrogen compared to blue hydrogen, which is gas-based, before 2030. And I think this is also feasible on account of our low LCOE, which is the levelized cost of energy, which is feasible on account of what I said with the customization and so on and so forth of our technology. And then, of course, we want to attract young people, new people, not so young people, but ambitious people to come and join us. This is with startups. You know, you want to bring as much talent as you can, people mm-hmm. that are really passionate about their what they do and how it's done. I think the combination of innovation, technology, kind of low impact power generation is very important. And we want to get as many people as we can interested in that. Of course, considering that we are a startup now, so there is a lot mm-hmm. of promise, but you need to work hard to deliver on the prospect. So anybody that is interested, do can reach out to me and we can talk more about it.
I mean, excellent. For a startup, you have global plans, which is really fascinating. And I really wish you lots of success to achieve all of them. And can you share what are the challenges that you are facing as a startup in the renewable energy field? And what could regulators do better to stimulate the renewable energy transition and to help startups like yours?
Yeah, these are two questions, I think.
Yeah, let's start with the first one, the challenges.
The challenges. Honestly speaking, again, I will speak from both as an academic and as a person that is involved in the business of energy right now. As an academic, I would say that there is a big ambition to support renewable startups in Europe. So in terms of policy, we have very big ambitious targets for deep decarbonization, you know, the Green Deal, mm-hmm. Our Fit for 25 sort of ambition and so on. So it's a very fertile ground in terms of ambition for innovators. If you look at it though from a business of energy perspective, I have a little, I wouldn't say complaint, but I have a little asterisk there. And I would say that in this situation, the way that research funding is structured is primarily supporting the bigger guys, those that have enough funding to use the EU funding to leverage. Now, if you look at it from a public policy, public good perspective, and you are a bit also, let's say, you want to be a bit more, you want to look at industrial development, you will see that you have to think big. And now I'm kind of answering in the second part of your question, mm-hmm. which is about policymakers and regulators. Funnily enough, I did work on as a regulator for 2 years, for the 28, at the time now 27 national energy regulatory authorities. In the past, and then I did produce policy for a bit less than 8 years in the European Commission. So I wrote legislation. So half of my career, I've drafted legislation and regulation and policy. So mm-hmm. I can answer your question from a practitioner side as well, because I did that. And then I was a lobbyist, so I can see things both ways. But what I'm saying is that those, the bigger guys that have an established industrial process, you can expect they are not looking at revolution, they are looking at evolution and incremental at that. Either that, or you are like Tesla or whoever, like this kind of guys, where they are really, you saw what they received recently from NASA for the space discovery in the moon. But there you have a different kind of leverage. It's a completely different ball game. Seawind is not there. So what I'm saying, just to wrap that part, is that we need the research environment to favor, I would say, green innovation a bit more, to favor the possibility of those that are really not within the exact system as it is, to be able to bring into that part, to contribute to this kind of sort of accelerated ambition of the EU. You cannot be as ambitious as the EU is right now, which is like a fifth gear ambition, you know, with using the existing technologies. I think we need to place a bit more attention with regard to research funding on those that will be sort of building better, using some of the existing materials, but really bringing some out of the box thinking. Mm-hmm. And this is also our technology, you know, it's the two-blader with a teetering hinge on a different foundation than our competition is a different approach to things.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because we do have technologies that can help solve climate challenges, but on the other hand, what we need to achieve is so high and the ambition is so high that we also need to support the progressive technologies that are going to not evolutionize, but revolutionize things and get us to where we need to be. Well, Kyriakos, thank you very much for such an insightful conversation today. I certainly learned a lot about floating wind turbines, and I praise you for that. And I can only wish you lots of success to scale globally and to achieve all the plans that you are doing and a lot more to revolutionize the renewable energy field.
Thank you, Elena. It was great. I appreciated a lot our discussion today. I also feel that what we are saying is not very easy to digest if you just have a guy in a shirt in front of you in the screen. So I would very much appreciate if you could offer to our viewers some links to the Seawind website, to our LinkedIn account, maybe also to my LinkedIn account. And then there are a few videos in YouTube which are not beautiful, but they are videos that will give people some understanding of how this technology works, which is a bit different. Maybe one last thing. We are a startup. We very much like investors. So investors that are viewing this program, please contact me. We would be happy to discuss your interest. We have a brand new info memo out. Private people, also investors interested, we are happy to discuss also. It's a completely different ball game, private from the bigger ones. And then, of course, people that are interested in the technology, want to be associated. We are looking at a 10 nationalities plus team, so it's a very diverse team, with women leading also the team, so this is a good team. Please contact me. I would be very happy to discuss further.
Excellent. I'll make sure to share all the links to all our listeners so they can get in touch and take this conversation further with you.
Thank you.